Dear listener, welcome to the show.
What show? Viral. Viral.
Viral.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome to Viral.
Yeah.
Dear listener.
Hello.
Welcome, Linz.
Welcome, Megan.
Do you know what we're going to be talking about today?
Ice, baby. Ice, baby.
So, we're going to be talking about ICE, and I don't mean Immigration and Customs Enforcement, although...
Woo, I was scared.
I know, I'm sure we could do a terribly depressing episode on that, but we are not going to.
We
are going to do... Yeah,
mistrust.
We're going to do a jovial, dare I say...
Euphoric.
I couldn't find a good enough word, a good word.
I love jovial.
Jovial?
It's very Roman.
Ooh, you would know that.
Jove? Yeah.
Jove? You're saying Jove like I know a Roman named Jove.
No, it's the Roman god of thunder, Jove, also known as Zeus in Greek mythology. He's jovial.
Oh my goodness. I love it. Like, of course you knew that. I don't know that. I'm willing to bet that the majority of people weren't like, oh yeah, duh, Jove.
Duh.
Okay.
No,
well,
sorry.
No, this is great. We'll keep that going. Yeah. So, and but before,
yes,
of course, let us tend to what I believe to be the least tended to of our senses.
Ooh.
The olfactory.
Ooh, yes.
And also, Florida doesn't smell right. So, first, Yankee Candle Corner.
Corner.
So, today's scent is perhaps unsurprisingly.
Wow, unsurprisingly.
Is that not a word? Named Jack Frost.
Wow.
What?
Right on brand.
What?
Right on brand.
And it smells so crisp. Top note, initial impression.
Yeah.
Peppermint.
Ooh.
Right?
That
crisp,
makes sense.
Clean, cooling.
Yeah.
Mid, main body, mint.
Wow. We're really going out there on a limb, huh?
Yeah. And the base, the final impression, or the lingering essence, vanilla. And you know we can't do a candle fragrance without some sort of cream. So a sweet cream. Just the smell of sweet cream. Vanilla and sweet cream.
Good. Is there somebody at Yankee Candle that has a lactose intolerance and they're just putting
living
their...
vicariously
they're like, I can't eat it, but
yeah,
I can sure smell it.
Can't go in my mouth, but I can smell it all day. That's such a good question. Maybe when one of them come on our show to talk about public health, we can ask them.
To have an executive from Yankee Candle.
Can you imagine?
I can't.
They must be like delightful little elves, right?
They
These
must
are
be.
Like people whose job is about... Oh, the soul-crushing essence of capitalism, but also really delightful scents.
Yeah.
And they name three levels of them.
I think they're really probably incredible.
Very happy people.
It's really incredible.
Okay, so now let's talk about ICE.
Let's talk about ICE.
Okay, we'll do it again.
Oh, you just gotta chill.
So silly. Okay, so we are talking about ICE because as I was stumbling through a local bookstore, I happened upon, so in your mind, like single ray of sunshine beaming onto a single book on a shelf. And this book is called ICE, From Mixed Drinks to Skating Rinks.
Love.
A cool history of a hot commodity.
Love.
Come on.
They really did a good job on that.
Oh, she's a delight. By a woman named Amy Brady. Shout out to Amy Brady.
Thank
also,
you, Amy.
Yeah, if you want
to
be friends and come on the show, invited.
We would
open
love
invite.
To have you.
We
Friend
will crush
of the
hard.
Show.
Yes, that's right. So really, thanks to her for doing all of this dope research that brought just all of this delightful information to bear.
I can't wait to hear it.
It's going
to
be great. Okay, so some of the stuff that she wrote that we're not going to cover, but that is a part of the them story.
Ooh,
get it?
Wow.
The them story.
Wow, I love that.
Includes the contribution of Black folks in the early 1800s living in the segregated North and leading amazing work around the development of ice cream.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, all my favorite things.
She also touches on the liberating power of ice skating in the late 1800s for women, both recreationally and in the sport of figure skating. Which was one of the first places that women actually had full-blown competitions and were, I mean, to the extent that men could respect women at this point in history, actually respected for their contributions to a sport.
Wow.
Figure skating. Tremendously liberating.
Wow.
Also, the tantalizing sexual mystique of the Icemen in the 40s and 50s.
Ooh.
Because they were, for one of the first times in polite society,
uh-huh,
men who were inside the homes, ooh, with women alone.
Hey there.
Right? What's up? Right? Because the milkmen just left their milky shit and left. Whereas the Icemen, wow, actually had to come into the home and leave their ice in the ice fridge, which was inside.
Ooh.
So,
is that an ice cube? Or are you just happy to see me?
So, lots of intrigue and scandal in the rest of the,
wow,
book. We're talking about public health here,
yes,
folks.
Of
so,
course.
We're going to keep it, I don't know what we're going to keep
PG.
It.
Not PG.
Yeah, clearly we're not.
We're going to keep it PH.
We're vibing. We're all hopped up on peppermint, mint, and sweet cream up in this studio.
Gross.
It's happening. Okay, so, first thing I learned.
Tell me.
History, health, and humor.
Ooh.
The viral trio.
Yeah.
So the first thing I learned is that there was actually a little ice age. Were you aware of this?
A little baby?
A little ice age.
A little ice age.
A little ice age. And they called it the little ice age.
What?
Yes, and it ended in the 1800s, and it lasted about 4,000 years, and it was a naturally occurring phenomenon, unlike what we're currently doing to the planet, a naturally occurring phenomenon caused by a combination of erupting volcanoes and a period of calm on the surface of the sun.
Whoa, what?
Yeah, the sun was calm.
The sun was vibing.
So shit got cold.
Crazy.
Right? The sun was like, I'm out. I need a 4,000 year.
I need a little break, guys.
Yeah. So because of that, shit got cold. The little ice age made things cold. So The origins of ice and commercial ice were all about ice harvesting.
Wow.
Right? They would harvest ice from the Great Lakes. Lynn's, you and I are from America's,
yeah,
High Five.
Yes.
The great state of Michigan, the largest source of fresh water on the planet.
You guys, these lakes are really important.
Oh, they're absolutely stunning. They're, yeah, gorgeous.
Did you see that they found a new shipwreck in Lake Superior?
I did not.
Yeah, it was on the news.
Most deadly stretch of water on the planet.
Don't go there, guys.
Nope.
They don't even know how deep it is.
No, they have no idea. It's just deep, fresh glacier water.
It is a black hole of really cold water.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway.
But it's lovely. And it's excellent beer up there. Great microbrews. Anyway, the state of Michigan should sponsor us.
Oh, pure Michigan.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, do that. Oh, wow, right. We're a lot of shout outs here.
I'll write it down.
Yeah, okay, we'll jot that down.
Yeah.
Okay, so originally ice was harvested.
Mm-hmm.
Then the little ice age ended.
Mm-hmm.
So human beings with their industrious little paws,
mm-hmm,
had to figure out how to now manufacture ice. So we're thinking again, we're a public health podcast, folks. So we're talking about the history of ice in relationship to public health.
Yeah.
So one of the first pushes, perhaps, mm-hmm, not surprisingly, for creating ice, not just harvesting it, right, which, mm-hmm, has some geographical constraints, I would say.
Yes.
Right, but for manufacturing ice and distributing it was to help the health system treat people,
yep,
with, originally, yellow fever.
Really?
The origins of us making ice as a species go back to yellow fever.
Is it because people were hot?
Right on the nose, Lynn. You got it right on the nose.
I used my detective,
right,
skills.
So let's talk about an outbreak of yellow fever. On brand.
I mean, name a place.
Right? So picture this. Summer of 1841.
Okay.
We are in Florida because, of course, we're in Florida.
God.
In the sweltering, soul-crushing, brain-destroying heat of Florida,
yeah.
1841. And at this point, yellow fever has killed nearly 25% of Florida's population.
Yeah, yellow fever was really bad here.
Bro, like, she bad.
She bad.
25% of the population.
Yeah.
So there is a doctor named Dr. John Jory. And actually, his daughter and his granddaughter were killed by yellow fever.
Oh.
So he's a physician practicing, and he began to think, perhaps not surprisingly, about the connection between the heat in Florida and the deadliest time spans of yellow fever.
Mm.
Because yellow fever definitely peaked in the summer months, which were hottest, which is when you saw
Gross.
More people contracting it and also dying of it. Right? So he was like, there seems to be a relationship here from his deducery. So thermodynamics, thankfully,
yeah,
had already established that cold air sinks mm-hmm. and hot air rises.
Yeah.
So as he was working his wards and trying to figure out how to both save his patients, but also in the meantime, at least alleviate some of their suffering, he was able to take ice, which was being shipped commercially from the Great Lakes in wow. New York to Florida.
Wow.
Right? Okay. In the winter, this was mostly doable.
Yeah.
In the summer, ice was almost unheard of in the South, right? Yeah. There are some implications that were very challenging for us. We didn't have refrigeration in 18,
I can't even.
Right?
Oh, boy.
So at very high expense, he got some blocks of ice and took bedpans and drilled holes in them. I know, clean bedpans.
I know, but man.
Theoretically, yeah. Right? Okay, yeah. Basins, yeah. Right? And hung them above his patients' beds, drilled holes in them, and put blocks of ice in them, and opened the windows and turned on the fans, and it was a very early rudimentary type of air conditioning.
Wow.
And he noticed that people were more comfortable. Now, it didn't necessarily save their lives, no, right?
But turns it made out. It a little bit better but as yeah, they were dying.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly right. So it didn't heal them, but it made them more comfortable. So he thought, like, this is great. However, ice being imported from the north, this isn't an economically viable thing. No. Like, we can't do this. Yeah. So he was like, well, we need to figure out how to manufacture ice.
Or move a lot of people out of Florida during really
Which
bad
Which actually
months.
Is what I'm advocating for currently within my own friend and family group, but I don't know where he was at with that. But I digress. So he was like, we need to figure out a way. Mm-hmm. And I think he was like, I think human beings, we can manufacture ice. We don't just have to harvest it. We can manufacture it.
Like, what a novel idea.
Right? Like, my guy was like, in the name of science.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do this. So it turns out everybody hated his guts for this.
Oh,
right?
What?
Okay, so this is not at all going to be surprising, I feel like, to anyone
Great.
Listening to this podcast. But there were two main enemies in his fight to manufacture ice. And I feel like I can, we'll get it, but like, it's religion and business.
Wow,
I
mean, our good friends, friends of the pod.
Right,
religion and
yeah,
business.
Yeah, that's right. So the religious folks were like, God makes ice.
Whoa.
Get behind me, Satan.
What?
The God of ice. And how dare you take from him this celestial power or whatever the religious folks say. I'm unsure how they frame it, but it was something along those lines.
Wow.
So the church was like, you can go to hell.
Literally
go literally. To hell, right?
Like, yeah, we there.
That's exactly
we already
right.
there.
Yeah, we're already there. You just want to make shit cold, and that's yeah. way too far.
Yeah.
Number two, the northern businessmen
yep.
who were pulling ice for free out of God's green earth
yeah.
and shipping that shit on the backs of slaves, of course, to the south.
Yeah.
Right? So they also hated
They're
this
like,
idea.
Wait a second.
They're like, but we live in the north and you can't
this
destroy.
This is our thing.
Yeah. We're capitalists until it comes to the creative destruction of demand through innovation. And then we really hate.
Yeah.
The economy. Okay. So anyway, those two folks all hated his guts. And those are like big, pretty big, like powerful forces.
Yeah.
So anyway. Yeah, they won. The bad guys won. And
we
Jory
don't have
asked,
ice today.
Still and that don't, is, still don't that have is ice why today. We don't have air conditioning today. So they wanted the time. And this poor guy, Dr. Drury, spent like his entire life and career trying to get investors, which he had for
wow.
a time, trying to publish about it. And he actually was able in 1951 to file a patent and to secure a patent for an ice machine.
Wow.
Despite all of this,
he's like, I am a full-time doctor, and I'm also trying to do this thing.
Yeah, I'm just trying to make shit cold, guys.
Yeah, my
show
daughter
hands who
and
doesn't
want to
be cold.
Yeah.
Yeah. Come on.
Right?
Right? Anyway, he did die. So he got the patent in 1851. Then he died in 1855. They think probably of malaria. His
oh,
reputation
God.
Was in ruins. He was like $250,000 in debt.
Oh,
so he
Dr.
was
Jory.
I know he was really before his time though.
Yeah.
And then, of course, not surprisingly, I don't know how long it took the religious faction to like chill out.
Stop.
But I will say the business sector, actually, he had two investors from Europe who had come over and seen his prototypes and had invested at a time. Then they were out.
Yeah.
Several years after his death, they came back with models very similar to his ice machine
oh.
and well-funded hit the market and
Yeah.
The rest is history.
Yeah.
So they actually sold the designs to the U.S., to U.S. manufacturers. And by 1920, mm-hmm. right, so this is about 60 years after he died, the U.S. was producing 40 million tons of ice per year.
You know, sitting in those pews in, like, the Florida summer.
Bro.
At some point, you're going to be like,
but I feel like this is good for business if you're a church, right? Because yeah. everyone's hallucinating.
They speaking all, in tongues?
Yeah, they all feel the spirit. 100%. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Oh my God, it's like hot yoga.
Yeah. That's exactly right. I don't know why people do that either.
Same. We have friends that do it and they're probably like, shut up.
I know. They're like, it's so good for you. I'm like, I don't.
Is it?
Is it though? I'm not entirely
love
sure.
Ice.
I really love ice.
I love air conditioning too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Is
that the end of the ice story?
No.
Tell me more.
Not by a long shot.
You're really melting my brain over here.
It's so good. I am so glad to be actually doing this podcast because, again, everyone in my life currently is getting snippets of the ice book at all moments of the day and night, appropriate and inappropriate.
We appreciate you.
Oh, well.
We appreciate you.
It is nice to be able to fixate so clearly on something that actually doesn't seem terrible.
Yeah.
It's a delight.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I can't wait to hear more.
Okay, so let's talk more. So, again, public health perspective, and you know that I'm kind of bringing the economic perspective on public health.
Of course, always.
Right? I like the forgotten stuff, the olfactory senses, the economic implications of our public health decisions. So here, this story blows my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Amy Brady, just, you're here with us. You're in my heart. Okay, so let's talk about monopolies and government inaction.
Ooh.
Would you?
Are you talking about Microsoft?
What?
Weren't they deemed a monopoly?
Oh, recently?
No, like in like the late 90s.
I don't know, Linz.
Sorry. You said monopolies, and that's the first thing I thought of.
But there are so many to choose from.
I know. You're right. You're right. You're right.
Okay, so let's talk. So not that monopoly.
Okay, tell me.
Other monopoly.
Ooh.
Okay, and again, more public health disasters.
Great.
We love that. Okay,
We're interested.
So the 1800s were rife for all kinds of crazy shit.
Of course.
Of course, as they were. Okay, so 1890s.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, ice was being harvested and moved into cities like New York City to sell. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're still at the tail end of the little ice age. We're mm-hmm. still not deep. We're not manufacturing ice. Mm-hmm. We are selling ice that we have harvested. Okay, so, and there's businesses doing this now, right? There's an economic model. Those pithy entrepreneurs are out there peddling their icy wares.
Are they, like, out there on a frozen lake with, like, a saw?
Bro, yes. Yes, they are.
That sounds like such hard work.
It is
and
such
dangerous.
Hard work. And it was gross because horses pull the ice.
Oh.
And horses, if you've ever been to a place with horses.
A barn?
I was thinking stable? Mackinac Island because we're from Michigan, like other places. Horses just go to the bathroom where they are.
Yes.
Right? So horses are pulling the ice and they actually had to have a person whose job it was to walk behind with a push broom and sweep off the horse poop. Manure, pee and poop. And that, that is the ice. That's the, I mean, it was not a pure system. It was, this is also, you might recall, the Industrial Revolution where we were just dumping sludge indiscriminately.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Like if we don't see it.
Yeah. Be like, this will clearly get rid of it. We'll dump it in this lake that we also use to drink out of.
But you know, people were just kind of like, out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah. Be like, it's not that bad.
Yeah, it's water.
Yeah. Who cares that
it's a
like,
hole with water?
Yeah,
in
that
it.
It's like it itches.
Yeah.
So, business people peddling their wares. So, there was one mega businessman asshole.
Great.
Of course, there was. His name was Charles W. Morse.
Oh, man.
This guy. So, this guy is a very successful business person. Also, he like won the game. We created a game and he's like, I'm going to win that game. And he absolutely did. He bought up a bunch of ice businesses,
mm-hmm.
right? The power of equity.
Charlie's Cubes.
That's right. He just starts buying stuff, buys it. And he created the, not creatively, the Consolidated Ice Company.
Wow.
And they eventually bought up even Knickerbocker, which was, unsurprisingly, their main rival, Ice Company, in New York City.
Wow.
So
I feel like that name is really familiar.
Knickerbocker.
Knickerbocker? Yeah. Oh.
Like the Knicks? Are you kidding?
Is that where
Are you kidding?
I'm not kidding.
Yes, the Knicks. Wow.
Am I?
See, you just did a thing that I did with your weird Greek god thing. Except you can actually turn on your TV every now and then and see the New York Knicks playing a basketball game.
You see where my priorities lie.
Wow. I am fascinated by you right now.
Because you, it was funny because the way that you said it, you were like, Knickerbocker. And I'm like,
sounds familiar.
Cool.
Wow.
Is that a candy bar? I didn't know.
This might be the most educational podcast we have ever laid down for so many reasons.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so now Charles has a consolidated ice company. He's bought Knickerbocker. So he essentially has a monopoly in New York City.
Wow.
So what does he do? What's the first thing one would do if you have a monopoly?
He melts all of it. No, I'm just
you
kidding.
You are the worst capitalist ever. I destroy my own inventory.
So no, he jacks the price up.
He doubles the price of ice like the little bitch that he is.
Yep.
Okay, so he did that and the invisible hand of the market and blah, 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 blah. Very bad. And what had happened by this point is that there was a business mechanism to bring ice into New York City. So people were relying on ice. Their lifestyles had changed to accommodate ice, meaning that they had food that they would set on ice. They understood how to keep things cool so that they wouldn't spoil. They understand how to use ice again in that thermodynamics.
It's not a luxury, it's a utility.
That's exactly right. It had already been incorporated into their lives. And when they doubled the price, poor folks couldn't afford ice. Womp womp. Okay. I mean, no big deal, except you're a jerk, but okay, fine. Until 1896.
Ooh.
1896. Ooh. 1800s.
Yeah.
Going out with a bang.
Wild time.
And there was a deadly heat wave through New York City. Yep. And it was hot. And again, we are still now at this point into this ice monopoly where the price of ice is doubled. It's artificially high, right? It's not actually the price of ice. It's artificially high because of this monopoly. And this heat wave came through. And I mean, this was at the end of this heat wave, over 1,300 people had died. I mean, this is this is a lot of people dying in a heat wave. And the local
government. Preventable death.
Yeah. Right? And the local government refused to act. And at this point, so the state governor of New York at this time was a guy named Roswell P. Flower.
Yeah. Wow.
Okay, and this is a literal quote. This is a quote that he said in public that was recorded. This is where we were at the time. Quote, "It is not the providence of the government to support the people." Like, what?
Did he miss civics class?
That is your actual job, bro.
Yeah.
You were actually elected to serve the people.
Does he not realize that the reason why people elect him is because, and then the whole thing about a public servant and...
I don't know. My guy. Okay. Ooh. So he sucked and is not helpful.
Yep.
But, the New York City Police Commissioner at the time was like, this is bullshit.
Wow.
And he ordered hundreds of loads of ice and sent them into the poorest communities. Okay, so he was like, he went rogue. He was like, this is terrible. So he gets a bunch of ice, he sends it into poor communities, and again, over 1,300 people died, so it was still lethal.
Yeah.
However, lots of people were saved because this one commissioner actually decided to act.
And also, let's think about the correlation between heat and people being violent.
Yeah.
Civil unrest and a heat wave.
Yeah. So it turns out people really liked the police commissioner at that time, right?
Wow.
And they ended up supporting him in his newfound interest in politics. And that led to the emergence of the one and only Theodore Roosevelt into the political sphere. That was Teddy Roosevelt.
Wow.
And that was the swell of political support that led him to pursue his political career.
Carry a big stick and give the people ice.
Was that him?
He said, what is it? Be silent and carry a big stick.
Oh. Well. Yeah,
and
ice.
Give people ice.
Ice chunk.
Give them ice chunk. That's a great campaign tagline.
Save people's lives. Just saving people's lives. Okay, so I could go on and on about
what
this.
What happened to Charlie Morse?
Oh my gosh. So funny you should ask. Okay, so Morris continued his reign of capitalist terror. He actually did, he had a whole other Monopoly thing that actually, and people were pissed off.
Con man gonna con.
Con man's gonna con. So he actually did, he had a whole other thing that he ended up getting arrested for and sentenced. So he actually, he was sentenced to 15 years in an Atlanta penitentiary.
Ooh,
and
hot.
So, good.
Hotlanta.
You sit there and you sweat, that's mister. Right. So he wasn't there for very long, but he had a cellmate mm-hmm. who he ended up having a relationship with, a man named Carlo, who had been arrested for smuggling Italian immigrants into the country. Mm. And he spent time with Carlo, who was younger than him, and he like took him under his wing and taught him the tricks of the trade, as it were. And so, Morris, whatever. The fascinating part about this is the guy who's named Carlo, who learned from Morris while incarcerated in an Atlanta penitentiary, a few years later after his release, is now known as Carl's Ponzi.
Oh, my.
And began what has been known as the largest scheme, pyramid scheme, in the U.S.
Yeah.
That's the guy.
Even still even bigger than Bernie Madoff? Yeah. I mean, obviously Bernie Madoff was using that as
well,
a model.
He created the model.
Yeah. Good God, bruh.
Right? So that's what Morris did. I don't know how he died.
Well.
But that's what he did. Anyway, so he wasn't great. But again, wow. that story, the Ponzi story, again, I woke my wife up in the middle. I was reading and I was like, Nicole, wake up. I need to tell you this thing about the Ponzi scheme.
This feels like one of those crazy maps that the detectives put together with like red string right. and pins.
Right.
And then he was in a penitentiary in Atlanta. Yeah. The guy was Ponzi.
Yeah absolutely. Okay, wow. So clearly this book is dope. Yeah. Clearly Ice is amazing.
Thanks, Amy.
We love you.
Yeah.
So, begs the question.
Yeah.
What does it mean for a warming planet?
We need more ice, right?
So I learned a lot about the toll of cold stuff on the planet. So there are different chemicals. Oh, you know, I don't like saying chemicals, but there are different chemicals that go into refrigerants because now we can manufacture ice at will. Everybody, I mean, most homes have one, if not two, ice manufacturing machines.
Yeah.
It turns out, so there are a couple different chemicals that go into making ice currently. Okay. One of them is chlorofluorocarbons. Do you know that?
I literally talked about it earlier when we were talking about the ozone.
Chlorofluorocarbons.
CFCs.
CHCs.
CHCs, sorry.
Yeah. And they're used, they historically were used a lot, and you're exactly right. This is when we were talking about hairspray.
Yeah.
And they have, they're now out of fashion.
Yeah.
Because they destroy the ozone layer.
Yeah.
Yeah, bad. So now what we're using, the most common chemical is hydrofluorocarbons, HFCs, and they don't contain chlorine, so they don't deplete the ozone, but they do have a high global warming potential and potentially contribute to climate change.
Ooh,
right.
Okay.
But we've moved away from, as we mentioned, from these CHCs to HFCs. And in 2016, actually, officials from 150 countries signed the Kigali Amendment, which was an amendment to reduce HFC consumption by 80%.
Wow.
By 2047. And in a shocking display of solidarity with all living things, the U.S. Senate signed on in 2022, which doesn't track, right? But they did.
Wow. Well,
and it turns out that these CFCs and HFCs have accounted for almost 11% of total warming emissions to date.
Really? Jeez.
11%.
Whoa.
I mean, that's a lot for like a single thing.
Yeah. Wow. That is 11%.
I don't even know where we go from here.
I want to go back to the figure skating.
Ooh,
go on. Because I grew up, like, we watched the Olympics, but most of what we watched was figure skating. And I loved figure skating. But now that you're talking about this, I'm like, yeah, it's incredible to me that we have created a sport where we had to actually figure out how to manufacture atmospheric conditions in order to have this sport.
Yeah.
And the fact that it was like the first sport that women were allowed to compete in.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
No, the history of figure skating, how she laid it out, was really fascinating because you had, and again, in the North, it used to get colder.
Yeah. I used to ice skate.
Yeah, absolutely. In our backyard, we could like make a little pond. Yep. You know, your dad had put the tarp out and you'd freeze it. So in places like New York, in big cities, they actually had natural ice rinks, mm-hmm. right, in the mm-hmm. winter that they would, and that people would skate around in. Mm-hmm. So it had just, and that's not figure skating per se, that's just ice skating as a form of recreation. And it had implications in terms of equality between the sexes, mm-hmm. the sex binary that we had at that point, because women actually were able to wear, like, skirts that were, like, not pants, but they were able to wear more active things because if they fell, they had their petticoats, their lady gear had to be equipped, right? And it was also, it had implications in terms of the classes, right? Because it was a place where people rich and poor were doing a thing where everyone kind of looked silly.
Yeah.
So you could have rich barons falling and laughing next to somebody who was poor. Wow. So, I mean, there were a lot of implications in terms of what skating rinks did for women and for poor folks, offering different types of entertainment and access, right? You met people who were in a different socioeconomic status.
And those are typically in spaces like parks where everybody can come and hang out.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And so those were outdoor spaces, right? So then once they start to create indoor spaces, right, again, they start thinking like, we can do events, right? Like we can actually manufacture spaces where we can have not only people skating, where they can
hockey.
Come, but they can watch things.
Yeah.
They can watch ice skating. They can watch, like, figure skating. They can watch hockey. So they had these multi-purpose venues that were, that, and again, figure skating was very much framed as elegance, right? I mean, and it is elegant.
It's beautiful.
It's graceful. It is many of the attributes that we tend to attribute to the feminine.
It's ballet.
It is ballet.
Dance, yeah.
It is beautiful. And so there was, from the jump, this, like, push that, like, these are feminine things.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, it didn't make sense at the beginning, right, to, like, omit women from it, right?
Yeah.
They were a part of it. And actually, I think how she lays it out, really it was men kind of vying for how to make masculine figure skating, like how to make it powerful and, quote, manly, when so much of it was, even now when you watch male figure skating, it is about grace. It is.
It
still feels power, yes, but it also feels very feminine.
I also think about figure skating and queer culture, right?
Yeah.
Because you're right. Like, this is a space where men are supposed to be graceful, and it's more acceptable to be feminine.
Yeah.
As a man.
Yeah.
Like Mark
Hamill.
Or to
have female attributes. Yeah.
Oh. Yes, or Johnny Weir.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah.
But, like, I remember watching, I think it's Mark Hamill. He's doing backflips.
Yeah, he, like, flipped. Front flips, back flips.
And actually, you know, there's another podcast, if anybody's interested, called You're Wrong About, and they have a whole section on, they talk about Tanya Harding and kind of, like, we did her a little dirty. Like, she, you know, and then, of course, I, Tanya came out. But it also talks about, like, you know, black and brown folks in figure skating and how hard it has been to break into that. Because there was an incredible black figure skater who ended up getting disqualified because she could also basically do entire flips. And they were like, no, you can't do that. It's too dangerous. And she was like, I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Like telling women they can't do specific moves because it's too dangerous.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So, no, I just love that, like, figure skating was included in this because it, like, touches a little piece of my heart. Because we used to skate all the time. We lived in the Great Lakes area.
We sure did.
When it used to freeze. But, yeah, we would.
Yeah, every pond
skate.
Froze.
Yeah.
We'd go to any body of water in our little towns would be frozen and there would be people on it.
Yeah. My husband played outdoor ice hockey.
Did he?
Yeah, and they had like a little minor, like an A-League hockey team.
Alpina
called the
hockey.
Ice Diggers.
Wow, yeah. You got to really focus on saying that right.
Yeah, you do. And we used to go to their games. Yeah, I know. I know. Obviously, hockey is big in Michigan.
Yeah, it is. It is big in Michigan.
But it's big here. You know, that's another thing.
Champa Bay,
that's right. And, you know, you think about the ability to have hockey teams across the United States now.
Yeah.
We have a hockey team in Tampa in Florida.
Yeah. And the Panthers are over in north of Miami somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't have been able to do that in the mini. Well, no, not in the mini Ice Age.
In the Little Ice Age, no, we weren't ready. That was too advanced for us then.
I wonder how nice it was, though, here in the Little Ice Age.
It was probably still terrible.
Oh, you're right.
25% of the population died of yellow fever.
I mean, minus the yellow fever. I wonder what the...
Oh, God.
Uh-uh. Probably not great. I mean, that's part of the reason that the CDC is... the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, is located in Atlanta because in the South, we were really having a hard time with yellow fever.
Really?
Yeah, you didn't know that?
No.
Yeah. Yeah, because Georgia and Florida, I mean, the South was the epicenter of...
Misery.
Of misery, yeah. So the Centers for Disease Control started in Atlanta because it was right there. Yeah.
Mm.
I know.
No, you cannot live in... This place is inhospitable without air conditioning, and you cannot tell me otherwise. This place makes no sense without air conditioning.
I can't...
Or ice. These people lived in hot, drank hot, bathed hot. That's the thing. For people who don't live in Florida, during the summer, you cannot get cold water out of the faucet.
It's hot. It's
you cannot hot take a cold shower. It is misery. Why do we live here?
Even the water is so hot in the bay. It's it's so gross.
Okay, so what do we do with a warming planet? Okay.
Yeah.
Refrigeration stuff accounted for 11% of global warming. So the irony of, like, our drive as a species to feel cool in a warming planet is making the planet warmer. Ooh, wah, wah.
That's like a catch-22, my friend.
It show is. And yeah. I think one of the things I love, I mean, I love a million things about the book, and mm-hmm. I think you should all read it.
Yeah.
Is that so much of it touches on the socio-political stuff that we talk about all the time. Like how the economy runs, right? Mm-hmm. Understanding what we should incentivize. So when you think of, we have an economic climate right now that has tremendous philosophical climate, like neoliberal economic climate. She getting hot.
Yeah.
Well, she is getting
hot. She is getting hot.
Yeah, there's a lot of inflation. Yeah, okay. But our current, like, our philosophy economically is actually really harmful to thinking about how to curtail the emissions that are warming the planet.
Right.
Right. We really don't have political will currently to do the things, to pull the levers economically that we need to do, to start investing in alternative energy, to start doing things that I feel like are now even garnering more public attention, which is like, stop with single-use plastic. I do not need a toothpaste tube that will exist for a million years.
Yeah.
Give me a toothpaste tablet that has zero waste.
Yeah.
Like, stop with these, like, detergent bottles. No sponsorships there. Stop with these, like, crazy, like, you can run them over with your car, indestructible bottles for, like, soap. What are we doing?
And also, can we fix the recycling system? The fact that, like, 99% of things that we put in recycling aren't recycled. What are we doing? Why am I being gaslit?
You are being gaslit. That there is no such thing. It is not recycled. Like, we need to stop.
Can we? No more styrofoam.
Again, but these are like things that, like, you can. These are, we understand enough. We don't understand inflation. Like, we say we do, and I get it. Shout out to Janet Yellen. I love her so much. But, like, the economy. Oh, I hope so.
Yeah.
Like, the economy is very big and complicated. And the things that we do know is if you put money in the system to incentivize a specific type of thing. So, for example, if you told companies that they are now, instead of externalizing the externalities, they are now financially liable for the life cycle of every good that they put out into the market.
Wow.
All of those water bottle companies that are sucking groundwater out of our beautiful home state and putting it in plastic water bottles that will last for millennia, they're going to start thinking about how to create water distribution mechanisms that aren't plastic, because they're going to say, like, there's a cost to manufacturing plastic and I'm not going to do it. These are, like, economic levers that we know.
Yes, we do that we regulate for health in a lot of different ways.
Sure do.
Right? We say, hey, don't put that there. Don't put that there. don't put drugs out that are going to give babies birth defects.
Yeah.
You know, we have mechanisms to regulate things that are going to impact people's health. Why can't those be extended to climate change related stuff? Or just instead of saying, one of my biggest pet peeves is that so many times in order to enact policy that is good for people, we have to make an economic argument.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And it's like, what do we have to?
Do we though?
Can't we just say this is a human right?
Ooh.
Period.
Ooh.
You know?
Hackles.
Ooh.
Public. A right.
What?
How dare you?
It's not.
A right to water? How dare you?
Right?
Yeah. We totally can. And perhaps unsurprisingly, I think the answer to how ice affects our lives in a warming planet is to create better economic policies for us to not die of heat.
Right.
Oh, it's so hot.
Let's cool down on the fossil fuels and let's heat up our renewable energy and also thinking more about how we regulate things for the betterment of humanity rather than the betterment of the 1%.
Let's do that.
Let's do that.
Okay, we've agreed.
It's settled.
We're in agreement. It's You're welcome, settled. The United States and also the rest of the planet.
Yeah.
All right.
That was amazing.
I think we've done what we set out to do today. Yeah.
This was so good. This was great. I learned so much today about ice.
Oh my gosh, it's so good.
But you know what you really left out? Icing.
What? As a practitioner of the confectionery arts, that feels like a tremendous read.
I'm just pointing something out that seemed very obvious.
All right, point taken.
That's okay.
We'll come back with a cupcake round.
Oh my gosh. what do cupcakes have to do with public health?
Oh,
Everything. Yes. Well, thank you so much for providing this wonderful overview of an amazing book. And again, this is Ice by Amy Brady.
We love you, Amy.
And I would highly recommend that you visit your local bookstore.
Yeah.
For us, that's Tombolo Books.
It is.
And
Book and Bottle.
Book and Bottle.
We've got a couple great ones here.
Yeah, we really do. So, and, you know, always patronize local bookstores because they're amazing and they're just incredible spaces for people. And is there anything else you'd like to tell our listeners,
Brian? I am just so grateful for the opportunity to talk about ice.
Well, again, don't forget to like and subscribe Viral on whatever podcatcher you use, like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, whatever. You can find us online at viral-pod.com. You can also support our podcast at Patreon and on Ko-fi. Mm-hmm. The proceeds from this go to our amazing production team.
Handsome.
So handsome.
The Michael Conrad.
Tyler
and Tofu.
And Tofu.
The studio cat at the Kaboom Room.
Yes. And just remember, wash your hands.
Yep. Don't put that there.
And don't use ice that has horse poop in it.
Oh. Ooh. Yeah, we've come so far.
We really have. Thank you, urban planning and sewer systems.
Yeah, that's right. I really appreciate you.
Yeah, that was good. All right, until next time.
Peace.